You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Page to Stage,
a conversation with theater makers.
We're your hosts.
That's Brian.
And that's Mary.
Join us as we focus the spotlight back on the theater maker to uncover their process.
We speak with folks in the industry that often aren't heard from,
such as stage managers, producers, crew members, marketing professionals,
and everything in between. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, my name is Michaela Brewster, and I am an account manager at Marathon Digital, and we run organic social media content for Broadway shows. So I have the pleasure of running Hamilton, Hadestown, Be More Chill, and a bunch of other shows over the last three-ish years. And additionally, I've also done some work with Broadway Advocacy Coalition, with their Broadway for Black Lives Matter events that they've been hosting for the industry. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I love that you said organic posts.
Yeah.
With Marathon Digital.
Yeah, that's our specialty. We actually don't do any paid social media. So I really love it because I get to dive into like what I'm most passionate about, which is like engaging with fans and getting to make kind of that relationship really strong, rather than focusing on, you know, kind of the nitty gritty of like dollars and cents and that kind of stuff. I get to kind of think a lot more creatively while still balancing, of course, like all of the important data that goes into social media management. But
yeah, because it can be, I mean, Facebook ads in and of itself can be a whole other like section of someone's resume, to be honest. I mean, it's so complicated sometimes, or it can get so complicated with all of the different campaigns you can run and the different audiences that you can tag for paid campaigns, you know, on Facebook specifically. But I love that you specifically called out organic, because I think that's very unique to Marathon Digital's role, I would say. I don't know if you would agree with that, but that's been my perspective of that company since it launched. And it's relatively new, right? It's a few years old now.
Yeah, I was actually, I think I can call myself like the third maybe employee of Marathon Digital. So yeah, I started as an intern back in 2016. So the summer of Hamilton and the Tony Awards. So I like to say I peaked back then, and it's just been downhill since then. I had like the best summer of my life and loved it so much, and went back, finished my senior year of college, and then came right back over to New York, and yeah, been there ever since.
For any of our listeners who've been listening to us for at least the past year, they'll recognize that we had Stevie Coleman on from SpotCo last March to discuss her process advertising Broadway shows with SpotCo. And a lot of SpotCo's clients, when I checked both websites, are also clients at Marathon Digital, including Hamilton and Hadestown. Can you explain to our listeners the difference between Marathon and SpotCo's responsibilities in a show's creative process, such as those two specifically?
So like Mary was saying, how we kind of have this niche within like having organic social media content, you know, we are not a full service agency, so we don't do paid social. We also don't do any like advertising with like billboards or any kind of print stuff. Like we don't handle any of that. We really are focused in on social media. And so the cool thing is that we then get to work with a lot of other agencies who do all of those things. So we can kind of like be another cog in the wheel. So in the same way where there are press agencies who come in and just handle like that segment, we kind of operate like that, where we come in and we just take over the social media and then get to collaborate with the agency that has been hired on to do all the other stuff to make sure that the work in social media is lining up with our goals in the larger marketing campaign and that we all are kind of like on the same page.
Now, with Hamilton, were you guys involved? You guys weren't involved with Hamilton from the beginning, or were you?
We were, yes.
You so were, like, okay.
The public, I think, was kind of like maybe when my boss, Mike Carnes, when he kind of started those conversations. But I, with Broadway, we've been there since the beginning. My boss likes to tell the story of when Hamilton went to the White House, he got to go with them. And at that point, it was like him and maybe one other employee at the time. And so, yeah, like he showed up at the White House with like an iPhone and like maybe a gimbal, but like very, very like that was the beginning of Marathon Digital. We kind of our birth kind of came with Hamilton. That was kind of when we grew and when he started hiring on more people. He had other clients before that he was working on, but that was kind of the catalyst into Marathon Digital that we know today.
That's insane. I love that.
Yeah.
How could you like walk us through how like maybe some of your beginning conversations with a show or any kind of client, if you want to use like any specific show as an example, that's great too. But just like, what are the conversations that you're having and how do you then start to build this brand around this show? And then also then how do you build this social platform or social platforms around any given show?
We kind of enter the stage at different points. So sometimes we come on and we've been with the show from the very beginning, like when even like out of town tryouts and you know, pre-Broadway, all of that, we get to kind of like come along with the show. And so that we're pretty much starting with a blank slate. That's where we're creating the counts on our own and kind of get to dictate a lot of what the social media style looks like, which I can get a little bit more into that later. But other times we will come in and kind of take over an account. And so those have different approaches because one, obviously, someone's already kind of begun the work. So we kind of pick up the torch where they've left off and then, just kind of put our own spin on things. So with both scenarios, we have conversations with the producers, sometimes with creative team members, where kind of like just from the beginning, we've like maybe seen a recording of the show or listened to a cast album or demos. And then we have some ideas of what we're thinking, but kind of want to have this first conversation be open to them of what would you like to see? What's important to you? And that's when we kind of get into detailed questions about like, tone and voice of the account and like, what do you want it to sound like? What are do's and don'ts of this kind of persona that we're going to create on social media? So we take that after that initial conversation where we kind of get those basic questions answered. We come back, we have a brainstorm as the entire team. And then from there, those ideas are handed to me as the account manager. And I break it down into like a strategy document. So we list out goals that we have and then put different campaigns in under that and then give it back to the producers for them to approve. And then that's kind of the launching point for us where we're able to kind of have a roadmap of what it is that we want to do. And sometimes that roadmap goes through sections of the show. So for example, with Hadestown, when it was in London before Broadway, you know, we had a specific strategy during that point. And then when it was pre-Broadway and in rehearsals, then we had a different strategy there. Once we were in previews, opening, you get the point. But sometimes it's segmented by like the life of the show. And then sometimes with like a really long running show like Hamilton, it's more kind of by years or quarters, where we might have like an overarching goal. So for example, with Hamilton, we launched an app. And so with that, we were like, okay, now all of our content for this year, where we're launching this app and trying to grow the audience there, we want some sort of tie-in to the app whenever we can. So we'll kind of have like one focus with some of these long-running shows, so that as we're going through each year, it's not like, ah, here's Hamilton's birthday again. Like, there's a new take to it each time. So
are the goals that you're setting always focused in getting people to buy tickets, or does that goal sort of shift in terms of just growing the audience?
I think the goals, I would say both of those are in there, but we even, sometimes the goals are even beyond that. Like, for example, with like a Be More Chill, for example, with that one, there was kind of a narrative that we wanted to share about the show, and almost like a feeling of community that we wanted to create, so that we can kind of like, with each show, no goal is going to be exactly the same of like, we want this many followers, or we want to sell this many tickets. It kind of gets a little more nuanced into like, what is the narrative that we want to show? Because with organic social media, we have this kind of hub, this base of people that we get to kind of have a long-term relationship with.
And how many people are on your team when you're talking about a team? How many people actually like have access to these accounts and are posting? Is it just you, and how many people are brainstorming all these ideas with you?
We're a team of 12, 14, maybe. I forget, but we're a pretty small company, and we segment kind of our teams into two sections. So one is called the account team and the other is the creative team. So the creative team, it's kind of split down the middle, like maybe if there's 12 of us or 6 and 6 on each side. But so that's where our graphic designers, our video editors, animators, all of that, that's the creative team. And then the account team, that's where I'm on. We call them pods. we couldn't come up with a better name for it, but we're workshopping it. But yes, so we have like pods. So there's an account manager and then an account coordinator. And so the two of us will work together, and we'll have multiple shows that we're working on. So for example, Marathon Digital represents Ain't Too Proud, but I don't work on that show at all. So I just focus in on my clients that I've been assigned to. So it's typically two of us in like that core team. And then Mike and Mel, our bosses, obviously are involved in all clients and kind of oversee that process.
So working with producers, have you come across producers who like have a hard time wrapping their head around social media? Because from my experience, several producers that I've worked with have made comments similar to like, you know, like social media doesn't sell, like people don't really buy off of social media. They're going to buy off of emails or more what's dubbed as like more traditional marketing. And so I'm curious as to like what your experience has been like with these creative heads of these different teams. Is it really a lot of convincing? Is it a lot of, are you actually, you know, can you prove that you're actually selling tickets based on social media alone? Yeah. If you could speak to that maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, it's fascinating because the conversation has completely changed. I feel like even in my short career so far, where I feel like when I was getting started in college and doing internships, like a lot of people were like, I don't really know what social media, like why this is important. I know people tell me this, but I don't really get it. And that mentality, and then also like, I don't think social media is worth it. I don't think that it's worth being. And of course, there were people who were like, yes, social media is good and it's the future. But I felt like a lot of the conversation kind of was in this unknown area. And I have felt a shift where now it's more like, either I completely understand how important social media is, or like, I know it's important. People have told me, I understand it. I just like, I don't understand like the actual, like how this works. So, but the good thing is because, I think because we're so specialized in organic social media content and the like quality of work that we create is really high. And, you know, everything we put out, we're really, really proud of. The producers that we're working with most of the time, like hired us because they see how important that is. Cause obviously it would be easier if you're hiring a spot co to have the spot co handle the social too. So typically we kind of already have a leg up, in terms of their mentality towards social media, because they have, gone through the extra step of bringing us on, knowing that the work that we're going to do, you know, it is valuable and something that they wanted us to do.
What's your outlook on or strategy when it comes to audience engagement? I know you spoke a little bit about how you enjoy that earlier, but how do you actually engage with the audience through social media channels?
Yeah. I mean, this is where I'm passionate about social media, but like this specifically, like fandom and engaging those types of people is like my sweet spot. And so I've been really excited to take on a bunch of those clients. That's like a Hamilton, a Be More Chill, a Hadestown, that have these people who are like obsessed with this show, need all of this. And there's almost like a mentality, an understanding that I've been able to gain from years of just kind of like talking to these same kind of people, who feel the same way about a show. So, you know, there are certain things that, I don't know, it's almost like in my gut now where I'm like, oh, I know like this is going to be something that they'll resonate with. But a lot of that connection really comes, I believe, in community management. We actually have dedicated community managers who will log on like before the show, during intermission, after the show. And then also then we have someone else who's doing it like throughout the day. So we're making sure that all the times when people are wanting to talk with us, that we're around and available. And yes, we're a brand. Like we're not pretending to be a person, but we do create a whole persona around each show. And so there's actual, I've written out descriptions of Be More Chill is this kind of a person. They think this way. They want these things. They interact with others in this way. And so we lay all of that out. So that way our community managers know the perspective that they're speaking from, because each show has such different voices. And it's important to lean into that so that it doesn't feel like this generic bot that's talking to you. With Be More Chill, Carly is our community manager for, she was working on that when we were on Broadway. It was maybe first preview or opening night or something. I was taking photos of people in like the front row, and they're like, oh wait, do you run the social media for Be More Chill? And I was like, yeah, I do actually. And they're like, oh my gosh, like I talk to you guys every day. And they're like, I feel like I know you. And they had actually brought a bag of coffee, like a coffee beans. And they were like, this is a gift for like I told them, I was like, it's actually Carly, but yes. And they're like, well, this is a gift for the community manager. I just feel like I know them. Like I talk to them every day. And that to me was like the perfect example of how, when you kind of put in the time and also the individuality to each response and, you know, treat each person not as just like another notification, but as someone who wants to engage actively in this brand, you know, the power that's in that and the connections that you're able to make with people. So
I think that's super powerful, especially for a brand like Be More Chill, which definitely had a life of its own prior to Broadway. And so obviously the fandom had been created well before it hit a Broadway stage, that you were able to like create this style guide essentially, but it's each show has its own bio, like you said, persona. Like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's very nerdy. I get very into it. But yeah, it's really helpful too, because yeah, there's just something that gets ingrained with you the more you know a client, where things just kind of feel Hamilton or not. Like you can, I just feel so like integrated in with the brand that you know, there are certain posts or certain reactions to things that we would have where you can just kind of like snap into that persona and can make decisions, because one event could happen, one thing could happen in the world, and each show might respond differently or not respond or whatever. So, yeah.
I've also noticed the brands, you know, theater outside of theater, like Netflix outside of Netflix, the brands or the shows that have a very strong, memorable voice on social media are the ones that I tend to remember the most. Because I know we went through like a time of social media where it was like the thing to really just remain professional. And that really kind of put a mask over everyone's voice. And I think we've gotten into this groove as a society to really lean in towards the, you know, the Bridgerton, like, sound when you're chatting with people or posting stuff online versus what you might post with Be More Chill or Hamilton even.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and some of these, like Wendy's, for example, like they literally hired a comedian to run that account. So
people
have really taken it so far in a way where I am really grateful because it's and it's funny because someone might look at that and be like, okay, well then we need to hire a comedian too. But it's like, if you're not a funny show, then you would take a different approach. And maybe, I don't know, it even gets down to like the punctuation or like which emojis do we use, not use. But, like there's so many stupid little details that I care way too much about that kind of when put all together create a dynamic person. Because yeah, to your point, it's like when we are all kind of washing over our personalities as brands and we're just like sending out information on the internet, it wasn't as interesting as like the people that you knew. And so I think that brands are kind of moving in that direction to feel almost like people. And honestly, even as we create content, I don't know if this is the way that everyone's moving, but what I have felt is that the more organic that you can feel, the more you can kind of like blend in and feel a part of everything else that's going on, the better and the more engagement that you'll get. Now there's a surge of like graphics and stuff, but for the most part, if you're following Hamilton, you don't just want to see gold background and black text every time we want to post anything. Like there has to be some variety in there. And a lot of our most popular posts are like a random photo that we took that like maybe was shot on an iPhone when we have like all these really intense like animations or like big video shoots. And it's kind of both work in different ways and with different clients and at different times. And so it's really interesting to like walk that line and see when you want to lean in on either side. I would say overall, we send things for approval to the producers so that they can review it. And that's really just because like, especially as we get started, we want to be in lockstep with them and want to make sure that we're not putting anything out that doesn't represent the brand. And there's no worse feeling than like needing to delete a post that you put up or and also that messes with the algorithm and all that stuff. So we lean probably a little more cautious than I think a lot of other agencies do. But then as we become more comfortable with the producers, we kind of are able to predict what their feedback might be, then we start to kind of pare it down. So with Hamilton, for example, my boss Mike makes pretty much all of the approvals, and if there's anything really, really big, then we'll go up to the producers and we'll share that with them. But then with like Hadestown, we're kind of in like a hybrid where we send them maybe like one or two posts every week, maybe, or every 2 weeks, of kind of like the bigger projects, and then the like day-to-day stuff that we feel comfortable with, we're good. But then on a show that we're just getting started with, we tend to send almost everything just so we can make sure that we're all on the same page and they feel good about it. Some things, for example, like community management, every response is not checked by the producers, but we do create like kind of some sample responses. So like if someone says, I'm excited to come to the show, we have like five canned responses that are in that voice that then the community manager can either use sparingly or can kind of like riff off of that. So sometimes we have like, yeah, things that are in the can that we know that we can use, or templated things that we feel pretty comfortable about.
Now, I'm interested to know, if we talk about Tony Award season, and this was, you know, you mentioned earlier that Hamilton was one of the first Tony Award campaigns that you worked on. So you've worked on Hamilton and Hadestown, which are two Tony Award winning musicals for Best Musical. How does this change your process when you're working on a show like Be More Chill that didn't really get the same response from critics?
You know, obviously at the beginning, you're like, I'd like to have good responses there. But if that's not where the strength of your campaign is, then you need to move on to something else and find what that new angle in is. So for us, we really pivoted to parents and teens and kind of like plugging into that. I think the problem that we ran into with Be More Chill in terms of ticket sales is we had this huge audience that was really, really excited about anything we would post and was just like breaking any records I'd ever seen of engagement rates or anything like that. So it felt like on paper, oh, this should be so easy. But in reality, you know, they're spread out all over the country and a lot of them are young and can't just like hop on a plane to come over to Broadway to see the show. So we started tapping into more like of that narrative of within like the tri-state area, trying to have it be something that like parents and their kids could like connect on. So we kind of took that angle, leaning into, I know that we worked with AKA on this and they created this really cool video of like being like a viral sensation. I know that was kind of an earlier on talking point that we had that we actually ended up moving away from. But yeah, there are different talking points throughout the life of the show. And then, of course, then Joe Iconis was nominated for a Tony. So then we kind of pivoted to like, okay, it's about the music. It's about the cast album, like a cast album that's been streamed this much. Like you got to check it out, like that kind of a thing. So it pivots with the life of the show, as well as like what the conversation is on the outside.
Would you say that those types of conversations and the pivoting that you're having to do and the brainstorming that you're having to do comes, I guess, more easily the more shows you kind of have under your belt? Or is it really like a whole new set of skills you're picking up for each client that you have?
That's a good question. No, I think that it definitely builds. The other thing is like, we're really big on like new ideas and coming up with like really creative concepts. But the more you do different shows, the more you kind of like, you know, doing some crazy, like, I don't know, for like Be More Chill, we did like an Instagram live, like a bunch of like 17 Instagram lives all at once to announce us coming to Broadway. And like, that was like this crazy idea. But now like we have done that. We have that in like our Rolodex of information of like, okay, here are some like media partners that we can connect with that we've done this before. This is kind of like how we work out the timing. Like, there are just certain things that you kind of like learn and then can implement in other projects. So then a lot of that with like timing and like figuring out, you know, where everyone's going to be at what time, that then helped me a little bit, because then it was a completely different project, but a little bit helped as I was then creating these whole like schedules for content shoots for Hamilton and Hadestown. We were doing that a lot right before the shutdown. And so, you know, taking skills and like seeds of skills from other projects and being able to be like, okay, how can we top it this time? How can we make it a little different, make it unique to this show? It's definitely helpful the more that you've done. And then it also, it's also not just us who's dictating it. A lot of the times, you know, the marketing and advertising agencies are going through the same thing, just it's not represented on social media. It's represented in, you know, whatever audiences that they're speaking to. So a lot of the times it's this group effort. So we'll come together and kind of all brainstorm and think of ways how we can each contribute to this new direction that we're headed in. So that's also helpful that, you know, it's not just me and my my experience in the shows that I've worked on before coming to the table, but, you know, it's all these like Broadway veterans who have worked on so many different shows and who have all these different case studies of like, okay, this works or this doesn't, that that we can use.
So I'd love to shift a little bit from away from shows and into other types of organizations and brands. I know specifically with Marathon Digital, you guys also work with BroadwayCon, with MTI, I believe, which are theater adjacent, obviously, but not show specific. And then I also want to talk about your work with Broadway Advocacy Coalition. And so I'd love to dive into your mind a little bit about, like, does any of social media, how does that change when you're not necessarily focused on one specific show? If it's, you know, BroadwayCon obviously is for all shows. MTI has, you know, a bunch of shows. And then Broadway Advocacy Coalition is a little bit different. So how do you manage those? And what are some things that you're doing as you're starting the brand or creating campaigns for the brand?
So in terms of kind of starting off, I wouldn't say there's too much difference there. There's still that initial conversation of what are our goals? What are the tent poles of the campaign that we want to have? And there's still kind of that persona and the tone and voice. All of that is still applicable even to a Broadway Con or a Broadway Advocacy Coalition. So I would say where it gets different, and this is where it's very different, is kind of in how wide our vision is on the industry. So, for example, with a new show that's coming in to Broadway, we're really focused in on ourselves, and then we're focused in on like the other, you know, if it's a musical, the other musicals who are opening in that same season. So we're kind of like in this smaller subset of Broadway, and that's where we're paying a lot more attention to kind of the conversations going on. But with a show, you know, there's, unless that's a part of the persona, typically there's not too much interaction that like Hamilton will have with like, you know, another show, unless we have a campaign where we're like, we want to do some sort of like crossover thing. So it's a little bit more tunnel vision. But then once you broaden it up to BroadwayCon, then you kind of have to be not only like an expert in the new season that's coming up, you have to be an expert in like all the running shows, all the shows that have ever run on Broadway. Like it just really expands the amount of shows that you're paying attention to, or the amount of events in the industry that you're paying attention to. So with that, you know, you can't dive in as deep as you would maybe with the show that is, you know, so focused in on this one specific goal. So you kind of get to bounce around, and like with BroadwayCon is where, like, thinking of content, we just have so much more to work with as we're like, you know, how should we celebrate 4th of July or something? It's like we've got all these different options. So it gives us some variety. The other thing is like the differences in the like lifetime of the project, I guess. With a show, obviously there's, you know, the rehearsal period, previews, opening, and then like however long it runs. But then with something like BroadwayCon or Broadway Advocacy Coalition, where there are specific events, you're kind of trying to like build excitement right before, really like go hard on coverage while it's happening. You want some sort of like recap or like debrief or something, or like being able to share those experiences afterwards and keep that conversation going. But then there's kind of a dip, and you know, we aren't running BroadwayCon the same way in like September that we are in January, because there are different focuses at that time, and there are there's like an increased amount of eyeballs on our account because the event is approaching. And so the timeline and like our content calendar shifts a lot more for something that's centered around an event rather than something that's happening, you know, 8 shows a week.
So you're not necessarily having to supply content all year round if it doesn't suit that specific organization. Is that what you're saying a little bit?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, like, we're, so for example, with BroadwayCon, we might, whereas leading up to it, we might post every day. We might take it down in kind of the off season, if you will, to maybe like two or three times a week or once a week, depending on kind of what the scope of our work is. But there's just kind of more of a rise and fall of attention that we want to gather. And sometimes, you know, it's not always centered around the event. Like, there's also the announcement of the dates, or like when tickets go on sale. Like, there are other moments that kind of serve as those events and those like peaks. I would say with shows, it feels a lot more kind of like on the same level. And of course, again, there are, you know, opening nights or big moments that have peaks, but I don't know, it feels, when there are events, it just feels more extreme, because you really want to build up a lot and then kind of like give it a rest for a little.
How do you and your team members stay organized, you know, to be able to post all these different things and balance all these various accounts? If we looked at your Google Calendar, is do you keep it all like logged in there when you're going to post things?
Thank you for asking, because I am obsessed with content calendars. I have been very involved in the process of creating ours and get very nerdy about it. So,
oh my God, share all your secrets. I love calendars.
Yes, they're so great. Yes. So we actually use Google Sheets as our content calendar, and we just create cells where we have each platform broken out. So we have different copy sometimes that's going out on Facebook versus Twitter versus Instagram or whatever. So we have like all the days written out, all the key dates that we might need to know about. And there is a very intense color coding system that I have created and been yelled at making sure that other people use it. They're like, Michaela, it's okay. We don't need to turn it blue or whatever. But
That's really satisfying. I'm so on board with that.
Thank you. And then it's our approved color is... It brings me so much joy. It's like the most beautiful color I've ever seen in my life, mostly because it's approved and ready to go out. But
what color is it?
Oh, it's like, it's a default like Google Docs color, but it's the like brightest like blue, almost, it's kind of actually like Marathon's almost our color.
Like a tealish. Oh, I love it. I use Google Sheets all the time. So I love to hear that you're doing the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, we've really considered trying other platforms. We considered using Airtable because we really love that for other kind of organizational things within our company. But we gave it a shot and I don't know, it just, we didn't love it as much. And I know, you know, there are other platforms that are like content calendars, but I love how customizable it is. And yeah, we'll like put the copy in and then we house all of our graphics and videos all in Dropbox. So then we'll just put the link in there. So everything's all in its place. And, you know, the nice thing is that at a glance, I'm able to see like, okay, we're good for the next week, but we have to get started on this, or, oh, this is sitting ready to be sent to producers for approval. Or, you know, we're missing this item or whatever. It's very, I can see it all. I understand it all. I know what's happening. So yeah, we're big on Google Calendar. Or Google Sheets.
That's really exciting. So I guess moving into what we're currently experiencing with Broadway being shut down, you're still working on these social media accounts and they're still so active and still engaging with fans. And in my opinion, I think that they're providing a lot of that sort of gap that people are missing from going to the theater. So how do you see the responsibility of these social media accounts while Broadway is closed?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it's also changed kind of over the course of this last 9 months that we've been going through. You know, at the beginning was when we really wanted to emphasize And still to this day, you know, like it's only an intermission, and we wanted to really provide ways to have people still be involved in the show, to feel, you know, like it's still going on. So with Hamilton, we did a lot of like live, like sing-alongs, or like live tweeting things, or, you know, everyone get on, we're going to do an Instagram live leading up to showtime, like just kind of like trying to recreate the feeling of theater as best as we can digitally. And then also just like, you know, knowing everyone was at home and didn't know what to do with themselves. So you're like, okay, well, everyone's playing Kahoot over Zoom, so let's make, you know, a Hamilton Kahoot game. So like we'll do different things like that to try to engage with fans and to kind of keep us top of mind as we all wait for Broadway to come back. But then of course in like May, June, whenever that was, and then continuing now, which I love to see, there's kind of a more like advocate role that a lot of shows took on, which is really wonderful to see. As people were protesting in the streets, you know, we were posting graphics too, making sure that we were trying to get people out to vote, or that we were even just, you know, plainly stating that Black Lives Matter, and making sure that we were a part of the conversation in a way that was helpful, that wasn't, you know, calling all the attention to us, because that wasn't really the point, but directing attention to others. So yeah, it's been really interesting. I feel like there's been lots of different eras of just the last 9 months. And I think that there are a lot of things that we've implemented during that time that will probably still continue on even after Broadway comes back. You know, it's kind of things that we're like, oh, this is important. Like, this is something that we want to do, want to be a part of. So
with Broadway Advocacy Coalition, obviously we saw, I know that they have been around well before May 2020, but they, you know, the organization came back to the forefront of the industry's, you know, social media news feeds when everything came to light with systemic racism within the industry. Let's talk about the Black Lives Matter Again event, or I guess Broadway Advocacy Coalition for Black Lives Matter Again event that happened in June. So that's, is that kind of when you jumped on board with Broadway Advocacy Coalition?
Yeah. So I actually, there was one other event. They did like 24-hour viral monologues that I had helped out before. That was, I don't know, maybe a month before the event or 2 months. But yeah, so I met Britton Smith, who is the president and one of the founders of Broadway Advocacy Coalition. I met him through Be More Chill. And I remember like I was walking backstage one day and he like pulled me aside. He's like, Michaela, I really want to work with you like in some way. And so over the years, I've worked with him on his band, Britton and the Sting. And then kind of as different opportunities came up, he kind of pulled me into them. So that was a really cool opportunity as they were ready to do this second really big Black Lives Matter event, that I got to come on and help with that. And really, I wasn't really involved in any of like the planning of the event, but there's a lot of, you know, that obviously factors into social content. Like, we want whatever's going on in the event to be reflected on social media. So I got to work with a lot of the different committees who were putting up different parts of the event to, you know, have like reflection cards that people would post on their Instagram stories afterwards, or provide video content for them. If they did this beautiful like dance, Ahmaud Simmons did this beautiful dance, there was kind of this like spoken word behind it. So I added some like captioning for them or branding or whatever. So what was really cool was we basically started with like this logo and that was it. And it was that like really bright purple and like the starry background and that like really chunky font. And we were like, okay, we have this event and we're launching it. And like, kind of, where do we go from here? So it was really cool getting to like put together the framework, kind of like what I was talking about before of with like a show, creating this whole persona, and also getting to tap in a lot more to like my graphic design and like video editing and stuff. Because at Marathon, we've got very talented people who do all of that for me. So then with Broadway Advocacy Coalition, it was just me. So I kind of got to lean into that and also, go beyond just like copying, previous posts that we've done to like keep an aesthetic, but to really build off of that and to make decisions of like, okay, we use this font this time and these colors and got to really like evolve the branding. It was really, really awesome to see the industry rally behind this event and this movement. And there were some things that we implemented, like I was saying, the like Instagram story screenshot and respond graphics that did so well, like really, really well for us. And I remember that day I don't even know how many hours I spent like saving each one and trying to like document and keep track of how many we got. But there were some really, really cool things that we implemented that now, like that concept, I'm able to take that and apply in other places, kind of like what we were talking about before of like, you know, you kind of develop this Rolodex of concepts and things that work. So, you know, we realized that it was in line with what we wanted for people to actively engage in the conversation. And accountability is a huge part of BAC. And so we wanted to make it clear that, yes, we're so glad that you attended and we're so glad that you signed the pledge, but we need even more from you. Like we want to hear your thoughts. We want to see where you've fallen short. We want to see, how you've succeeded and how you've actually implemented anti-racist, whether that's ideologies or having conversations with people or resources. We wanted to have people thinking about that. And so, that's where that was kind of birthed from. And then we realized like, oh, this is also a really great way to spread the word. And, you know, each person is kind of acting as this, like a micro influencer, and they're spreading the word about this to other people who can then be like, oh, like, what's this all about? Like, I also want to support the cause and can kind of circle back and get involved with us. So, there were some really, really great, kind of learning and exploration and new things that I got to try out when I wasn't just kind of in the show mode, you know?
Yeah, I will say from a follower of that account, it was fascinating. And also someone who attended those, you know, day two and day three of those virtual seminars, if you will, it was fascinating to see as you were reposting stuff to, you know, that story. And then also my own friends and followers and people that I follow, just seeing what everyone was writing and then sharing was a very eye-opening way for me to also then just, what is the word I'm trying to think of? Reflect back on my own experiences and my own doings and actions and how I've, you know, been acting within the industry or not acting within the industry or not speaking up or speaking up. And so it was interesting to, you know, hold myself accountable for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, accountability is all about community and you have to, accountability requires other people, but we're also separated now. And so, you know, we really wanted to make sure that, you know, people knew that it's also not something that we want, like, we don't want anything swept under the rug. Like, we want to bring things to light and we want to have people share and also remove this idea that, like, you can be a perfect ally or whatever word you want to use there. But to every time that we asked, like, okay, what are the good things that you're implementing? And, you know, what are the ways that you are trying to, you know, be a better person than you were the day before and the day before that? You know, also throwing in like, and how have you fallen short, understanding that we all do, you know? So that was really important to us. And we found that to be a great technique.
Do you have any insight into the differences that you might feel from on a personal level working on a project such as Broadway Advocacy Coalition versus maybe just a show that you were assigned to at work?
That's a good question. I mean, for one, it's those two are very different because one is, you know, there's a whole company behind me that I'm able to lean on, take, you know, collaborate with them with ideas. Obviously, like, well, I can't, not obviously, I can't do animation. So, you know, we'd have like animator. There were like really cool big things that we could do. But so I think that like with the shows that I was running, what was really exciting to me, especially right before the shutdown, is we were doing all these like really cool content shoots, was like the scale of what we were doing. And we get to do that when we have these longer running shows where, you know, we're able to invest a bit more of our time and energy and get to like really like dive into a brand because, you know, it's been running for a while. And so they, you know, producers might feel more comfortable to like invest in something like that. So I would say with at least where I was in like March or whenever that was, like the scale was really exciting. But then with something like Broadway Advocacy Coalition, where I'm running that on my own and that's separate from Marathon, yeah, there's just a lot more like ownership that I get to have over like everything and decisions that I get to make. And I think there's also, you know, it just being a smaller organization, it's like, it's, I don't know, it's all on me in a good way, sometimes in a way where I'm like, oh, I'd really like to have someone else's opinion. So yeah, so it's really exciting because I get to push myself and can kind of, I don't know, kind of even like sit back and like rely on my autopilot to go on and just to know like, okay, you've done this before, you know how to like run these things. It's a little different now that like you're handling all of it. But yeah, I think it was really exciting to see, to like look over that account and to feel really proud of the work that I was able to do. Even though I knew that, you know, I didn't have quite the amount of support that I would normally have if I had a whole company behind me. So, yeah, I think it was a good experience to be able to, yeah, push my limits and see what I could do.
This is our lightning round section. So we won't really respond, although we might have some like uncontrollable responses depending on how you answer, but these are just like short little questions just to get just like little zingers, if you will. So the first question, which is my personal favorite question, is what is one thing in the industry that confuses you?
Honestly, even like how a show is created from the very beginning. I think that I've seen a lot of like, you know, from a certain stage, like once they've done like a, you know, a reading, how that process goes from there. But before then, I actually like, I've not really seen that. So now that I think about it, like, I don't know how that process works.
What are three adjectives that describe your ideal working environment?
Fun, like laughter, creative, and innovative. Like I want to push the limits, you know?
Hmm. Is there something in your process that you find unique to you?
Well, probably no, because I'm sure someone else is doing this out there. But for me, I realized that I really needed to sit with a show or with a campaign that we were running with. And that, you know, I found a lot more ideas came from like a longer period of time of getting to like ruminate on ideas. Versus there are a lot of people in my company who are very good at just like spitballing and like throwing things out. And I quickly had to realize like, that's okay. That's their strong suit. But, you know, the way that I work is a little different.
What's one job in the theater industry that you think you might want to trade jobs with for 1 week if you could?
Ooh, okay. I might regret this, but I feel like, stage management is really, there's so much going on. And I think it's so fascinating to like, be like, I don't know, this like person who like at any point knows what anyone is doing at any given time. And there's a lot of like organization and like probably nerdy stuff that I get really into. So I say that now.
I'm sure it takes thinking.
Yeah, you'd be able to bring your calendar.
Yeah, the whole thing.
But I definitely would spend 1 second doing it and would be like, okay, no, this is for the people who are talented at this.
Okay, let's see. If you could invent a social media app, what would be your ideal features? And it could be an app for like just a general social media app. It could be for theater. It doesn't need to be for theater.
I think that number one, I would definitely have it be like very short content. I think that number one, that's I have realized my I am not able to stay focused on things much longer, which is getting scary. But yeah, definitely like short form. I think that I'm really interested, obviously, in like community and like building, building relationships. So like having almost like Facebook groups, but like the new version of that. So whatever that would be. But being able to have those like communities where you're able to share content with other people and interact. Cause I feel like I've tried to find like Facebook group equivalents for like who aren't on Facebook, and it I haven't found one that's at least big enough where it feels worth it to double down. So that's what I would create. I think there's a hole there.
What is one hobby that you have outside of the theater?
I've gotten really into, embarrassingly, Sims in quarantine, and I like burning candles. That's it. That's what I do.
Love a good candle. Love a good candle. Okay, so I guess this is our last question. What is the first show that you want to see when Broadway reopens?
Well, I'm going back and forth. I feel like Six, I just like really want to see that in terms of like new shows that I actually saw in Chicago. But I hadn't seen it on Broadway because it was, had really just started previews, I believe. But yeah, for like a new show, Six. Also, I never saw Mean Girls, which I'm upset about. Oh. I know. So I feel like maybe my response is more like to that, where it's like, oh, I just like never got a chance to see that. And so maybe even before seeing, I think I'd want to go for like, you know, a favorite. I really love Book of Mormon is one of my first favorite shows.
And the cool part is I think we're going to have the chance to see multiple first performances if we're really that into it, because I feel like they're going to stagger openings.
Yeah, they have to. They're going to have to.
Although then everyone's going to go after that, so it'll be even harder. Whereas before, I was like, oh, it's one night, like, you know, everyone's going to pick a different show. That increases the competition and makes me
the bloodbath in the Broadway community.
I can't imagine the rush lines.
Well, thank you so much, Michaela. How can our listeners find you on social media?
Michaela Brewster everywhere. I'm all about having a consistent handle. I'm pretty much everywhere. Just my name.
Great. We'll put all the links in the description of this podcast.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me. This is so fun.
It was great.
We had so much fun. Yeah. I feel like this is a really great like sister episode to Stevie's.
For sure.
I know. Even when you said it, it was like, oh my gosh, yes, we get to shout out Stevie.
Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Page to Stage. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Page to Stage Podcast.
And if you're enjoying these conversations, we would really appreciate it if you could take a couple minutes to rate and review us wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.
That's Brian.
That's Mary.
We'll see you later.
Bye.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.